Well, howdy.
It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on the day before the long Independence Day holiday. It is the second day of July, 2020. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that's where you go if you want to catch the live stream in its most bulletproof, sure-to-work fashion. It's also your home for all podcasting needs for Horn programming. And what's more, it's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. and 2 to 5 p.m. That's Eastern time. And 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and all times the great globe around. Just a matter of doing the math if you're in, say, Hawaii or Bermuda or someplace like that. Sorry about the delay. I was trying a different setting and it turned out not to work. It's fine now, I think. Let me check in with Brother Deacon Asa. Yep, there we go. We're 5x5. Good deal. And all is well. Steve had noted a moment ago the Horn feed was skipping around. No, it wasn't really skipping around. That was me connecting, disconnecting, and reconnecting, which is slightly different than, you know, like a skip in a record or anything. A skip in a record or anything. A skip in a record or anything. A skip in a record. Ah! Yeah. It is the Thursday before the long holiday weekend, and I had said that I'm not going to be here tomorrow. That we're just going to do something really, really rare and take a long holiday weekend. And I keep trying to convince myself that I'm going to do that. It is not easy. Generally speaking, if I'm upright, I'm on the air on any given evening. So, we'll get to all that. Every program here at the Horn. Oh wait, let me back up. No, like I said, the jump in and join the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live. But you heard that. It's like the program skipping. The program skipping. The program skipping. The program. Anyway, if you do pop in, you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Dowhead and Dave Number 11 and Jimmy and Ralps and Roger and Squeaky and Terry and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while indeed a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave today because, well, I have a feeling there would be considerable heat suffering going on. I'm guessing that here on this second day of July 2020, the man cave is something approaching a furnace. Mm-hmm. But jump on in. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the conversation. Here in a little bit, around an hour or so from now, we will gather together and travel over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary ordinary round table around which we gather at the end of the week for Friday on the front porch, this turning out, however, to be a thorn in the side Thursday on the front porch. Because, again, I plan to maybe take the night off tomorrow. Which brings me to that issue. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. Now, I'm not trying to be coy here. It's just that it depends on just exactly what I get done tomorrow and how I feel about it and if I can actually force myself to take a night off. And so, as noted, with every program here at the Horn does begin with gratitude, because you are the ones who keep this program on the air. And consequently, thanks go out to our second day of the month subscribers. And that would be Elizabeth and Rocco. If you'd like to be a second day of the month subscriber and give Elizabeth and Rocco some company, you would be most welcome to join them. It's real easy. You just go to the you go to headon.live and the form's right there, and it's real easy, and you just click it and say, make this happen every month, and lo and behold, it does. And then you're a subscriber. Okay? That having been said, we've got a $200 fundraising goal this evening, and we need to do $400 to finish the week. And so if we can, I know this is kind of like negative reinforcement, but if we can raise $400 this evening and stay even with the beginning of the month of July, then I might feel better about taking the evening off tomorrow. Otherwise, you know, maybe I'll be here and we'll be talking about trying to finish the week even. So that's where we stand. If you'd like to help out, run over and remember, you know, a $10 a month subscriber is setting themselves back all of less than half of a stick of Wrigley's chewing gum per day. That's what that $10 a month subscription means. So let's see how it plays out. I've got things in motion for this weekend. You know, about once a year, I get a hankering for a martini. And I realized that it just dawned on me that my hankering has kicked in. I mean, we're not talking about sticking the swirly straw in a bottle of Guzzler's gin or anything. But I got these two jars of fantastic olives from Henry's Olives there of Eureka, California. And just yesterday, my olive pitter arrived. Hear that? That's my olive pitter. And it makes enjoying Henry's Olives all the more easy. And it occurred to me that if a fellow was to pit several of those olives, and doing it with a little machine is so much easier than cutting at them by hand, but if a fellow was to pit several of those olives, and if a fellow was to get his martini glass out and his shaker, and if a fellow was to put some good gin in it, in the shaker with some ice, and stir, remember, James Bond shakes, you stir. All that bullshit about bruising the gin or whatnot. Stir it. Yes, shake it if you must. Bob, quit telling us how to make our martinis. We don't have Henry's Olives anyway. But a dirty martini made with the brine from these Henry's Olives, I think there would have to be two. The first one would probably be made with the lemon garlic brine. The second made with the cumin coriander brine. But for aficionados of dirty martinis, you got to admit that's pretty special. So I'm pretty convinced that's going to happen. There will be, I don't know, you know, once I have the first one, I begin to have to talk with my teeth clenched. Because it just makes me, it makes you feel so gosh darned elite and fabulous. I will truly be, I don't know if I could get my hands on some halfway decent moonshine around here, I could make my dirty martini with that, and then I really would be a hillbilly elitist now, wouldn't I? But that's just, you know, one of those plans. Well, I will take that to heart, Steve, and hopefully things will work out in such a way that I can. Steve in New York says, with the confluence of the olives and the olive pitter, if you don't take off tomorrow evening, you're seriously tempting the goddess of irony. You know, let's see how it goes. I mean, we've had more profound Friday on the front porch miracles than $400, but let's just see. Now I'm thinking about those damn martinis. And see, that's the reason for two, you know, one with the cumin coriander brine, the other with the lemon garlic brine. It goes back to something that Dorothy Parker once wrote. I love to drink martinis, she said. Two at the very most. Three, and I'm under the table. Four, and I'm under the host. I don't think I have to worry about being under the host. I mean, especially if we're talking about Agnes. I mean, I really wouldn't care. I mean, it'd be downright inviting. Maybe I will. I won't tell the Agnes and the Martini story again. Although I will say that she became a bit flustered the other day and said, "Fuck it, get a bottle of gin. It's about time I dove back in again." And that would be her first taste of gin since, oh, 1990, spring of 1995. So there's been a 25 year hiatus, but on Agnes and gin. But with the brine this good, because she said, "Yeah, let's do that." Mm-hmm. Oh, but enough of this this carrying on and whatnot. I'm expecting, if things hold true, I'm expecting that long about, 45 minutes from now, we're going to hear from our friend Paul from Parts Unknown. I had a note from him earlier today saying that vacation time had finally rolled around for him and that he was not in quite so much lockdown at the lab. So I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to get an update from Paul from Parts Unknown on his view of the pandemic and a general idea of where this thing may be headed as far based on information that he has, because they are so intense where he works about maintaining cleanliness and viral freeness that they're, it's safe to say that he probably knows more than most. If Paul from Parts Unknown says wear a mask, wear a fucking mask. And speaking of not wearing masks, two stories, really. You remember our buddy Dan Fisher. He's coming up on 2 years with his new heart. He has a reason to urge and encourage people to be hypervigilant, because he maintains a permanently compromised immune system to keep his body from rejecting his new heart. And so right there in his backyard, uh, Rockland County, New York. Public health officials are trying to stop a brutal spike, a brutal cluster of COVID-19. Why? Because back on the 17th day of June, somewhere around 100 people gathered together, and they were young people, about 100 of them. They were in their 20s, you know, old enough to drink. And they decided it was time to have a party, or several. The host of the party was already having symptoms of the Rona, and later tested positive for it. So did 8 of the party guests. And so much as did the early health department of New York City when typhoid began killing people in New York City a century ago. Swung into action. And they started tracing where the disease was and where people had been. And then even though it's New York, which generally has a higher IQ than, say, Tennessee or Mississippi or Alabama, God knows West Virginia, well, people decided that they did not want to cooperate with health officials in the state of New York. And so Dr. Patricia Schnabel-Ruppert, the health commissioner of Rockland County, said on Wednesday, "My staff has been told that a person does not wish to or have to speak to my disease investigators. They hang up. They deny being at the party, even though we have their names from another party attendee." And at least in a place like New York, they don't just walk away and say, "Oh, well, freedom." Because that's basically what happens in states like Florida and South Carolina. What? Oh. The Invisible Man. Shut up. Stupid autoplay. I hates it. But anyway, they didn't take no for an answer. Even, "Well, I don't want to tell you. I ain't home. I ain't answering my phone." So they issued 8 subpoenas. And the 8 subpoenas came with the possibility of a fine of $2,000 per day for failing to respond to it. All 8 people decided they would rather simply participate with the health department in stopping the slow of the disease than pay $2,000 a day. We're talking about a party in West Nyack, New York. And now it's like playing a game of viral whack-a-mole. There are 2 other huge parties where guests at the first party may have overlapped with the other 2. New City, New York, June 20th, June 27th. And along the way, people who did cooperate said, "Yeah, and there's probably going to be another big one over the July 4th weekend." The Rockland County, New York executive is Ed Day. Mr. Day said, I will not allow the health of our county to be compromised because of ignorance, stupidity, or obstinance, or anything else. And so they are contact tracing for all they're worth now, and trying to stop another massive cluster from getting started and building the fire into another conflagration in the state of New York and the greater New York City area. But it's twice now that they've had to go to subpoenas to stop people from fucking their own communities. The last time they had to do it was with the measles epidemic last year. Jesus, people. And I don't understand, I don't necessarily understand the structuring of municipalities in the state of New York. But New City and West Nyack, both sites of these ignorant, disease-ridden bashes, are in the town of Clarkstown, New York. And George Homan, the town supervisor there, says that the police department in Clarkstown is prepared to enforce limits on gatherings. They did all of this, these 20-somethings, they did all of this in a county that already has over 13,600 recorded cases and 668 deaths. But they just couldn't stand it. They had to have them some party. Because sad. Because summer. Because warm weather. Sunshine. The fools. The mad fools. Jesus. So at least they're on top of things in Rockland County, New York. Dan pointed some things out that we might not have known from the reporting. He says, I've witnessed plenty of carefree, maskless revelry from young and old alike. So who the hell knows anymore? I try to preserve my faith in humanity, but these days, it ain't easy. I've seen cars and pickup trucks lined up along the curbs outside the high ranches with the boomer Gen X favorites like Bon Jovi and AC/DC blasting from the backyards and kitchens. Gray-haired dudes around my age with their stupid red solo cups huddled face-to-face and shoulder-to-shoulder because it's no worse than the flu or the media or America or something. Jesus. But that's New York, where people are, by and large, generally of better intelligence than some, let's just say, other parts of the country. As to the city structure in the state of New York, Steve in New York says, don't worry that you don't understand. We don't either. And adds to, in regard to the people hanging up the phone when called by the public health officers, they'd hang up the phone because the HIPAA and the ADA and the OSHA, right? And I got a medical condition that says I can't breathe with no mask on, except I can breathe just fine, I guess, out here because I'm a maggot.
but I don't have to tell you what my medical condition is. I might be figuring out what the name of it is right this very minute. And so consequently, we travel down to one of those less intelligent states. It gives me no joy to say that, but it's a fact. It's a fact. Underfunded and understaffed and undereducated educational systems produce an undereducated populace. It is, as they say, what it is. And so Alabama. And not just Alabama. The University of Alabama. T-Town, Tuscaloosa. In Africa and Asia, the teeth of the elements are the teeth of the elephants are fixed firmly in their heads, but in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa. Yeah, I know. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, home of the University of Alabama. 1836, it was founded. I was a student there for a time. Not in 1836, mind you. No, that would be 1986. Wait, that's 150 years? Never mind, don't cipher. And the social culture at the University of Alabama is typical of the social culture at the big southern state schools and other schools for that matter. A rowdy and boisterous fraternity and sorority system, a political culture that serves as an incubator to later members of state government. No small amount of money because it's the state school, and that's where mamas and daddies like to send their little lumpkins to for college so that they can say that they got a degree from the capstone. It's what they call it, the capstone. That's because of a sort of a really tall red brick obelisk-like structure called Denny Chimes that has a typical pyramidal capstone on it. So they call it the capstone. Great barbecue to be had in the area. Great food generally. And now news of, it's not like this is out of the ordinary or sui generis. I mean, you remember every fall we get stories of the bigotry and the misogyny and the sexism of fraternity sorority rush at the University of Alabama. There'll be a story of yet another sorority refusing to let a young black woman in. Or stories of the fraternities hanging out bed sheets that are painted with words like, dear moms and dads, thanks for leaving your young daughters here with us. Somehow it never discourages the moms and dads from sending their young daughters there. And now, as of today, a news story out of Tuscaloosa that even has some Alabamians perturbed and flummoxed. Because it turns out that just like in Rockland County, New York, They just couldn't help having themselves some party. They had to party. Even though it's July and school's out, you know, there's always a few folks who stick around for summer classes, but they're not having those either. No, they just wanted to have a party because it's sunshiny and warm. Oh, Lord, that West Central Alabama sun this time of year, it just beats down like a hammer and you're the anvil. They got a lake there, and you can go out and party by the lake, or if you got a friend with a boat, you can go out on a boat. And people walk around saying things like, "You want a beer? My daddy's rich." That, by the way, is a true story from 1986. "You want a beer? My daddy's rich." No thanks, I'll buy my own. You know, even something as prosaic as a goddamn beer can come with strings attached when you get into the Old South. My daddy's rich. And so Tuscaloosa City Councilwoman Sonia McKinstry described what's going on there in Tuscaloosa. She said the students were organizing, no kidding, COVID parties. Now, remember, this sort of gallows approach to danger and death is nothing new in the South. Hurricane Camille struck the Alabama-Mississippi Gulf Coast, I think, in 1969. And blew away an entire hotel of people who were throwing a hurricane party.
Woo, let's get all drunk during the hurricane. Woo!
That's what it sounds like.
Woo!
And the hurricane blew through, hurricane blew out, and the hurricane partiers were just not there anymore. Oh, this is similar. It reminds me of something our buddy Matt in San Francisco told us about a few weeks ago that happened during the height of the AIDS crisis. People who came to be known as bug chasers. Who deliberately tried to get HIV/AIDS just so they could stop having to worry about it. And so Fire Chief Randy Smith of Tuscaloosa said, "We'd seen over the last few weeks parties going on in the county or throughout the city and county in several locations where students or kids would come in with known positives. We thought that was kind of a rumor at first, but we did some additional research," and that's how you pronounce it, research, not research. "We did some additional research, and not only did the doctor's offices help confirm it, but the state confirmed they also had the same information." Well, might have been interesting if the state had been proactive and announced that earlier on, but remember, this is the state that's run by Governor Meemaw K. Ivey, and they're doing their best to try to make sure nobody really, really thoroughly understands just how grave this fucking pandemic is. Now, we thought it was a rumor. But then we did some additional research, and not only did the doctor's offices help. What about HEPA? Oh, my God. Sue the doctor's offices. They done told us who's got the disease. So according to City Councilwoman Sonia McKinstry, here's how the COVID parties worked. You might either want, and I'm not sure which, this is a your choice kind of thing. You might either want the hockey puck and the duct tape, or you might just want to go ahead and put the swirly straw in the bad tequila and get a good strong pull. Councilwoman McKinstry said they put money in a pot, Now, back in my day, we would put money into buying pot. But not these young geniuses. They put money in a pot, and then they go and all try to get the COVID. Whoever gets COVID first gets the pot. It makes no sense. They're intentionally doing it. Now imagine Mama and Daddy finding out that their precious Lumpkin was out there trying to catch the COVID so that they could win a $200 pot of wagering money. What would you do? Would you feel like somewhere along the way maybe you'd failed? All those years dragging the youngins off to church every Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday evening, you're dragging them off to church and trying to teach them the ways of walking upright in the light of the Lord. Making sure that they understand all about how important it is to have Republican family values. And then you find out that your kid is hovering near death on a ventilator because they decided to go to a COVID party because they wanted to win $200 by being the first one to sufficiently LARP and smolik and grabulate and globber around so that they could get the COVID real good. As Mama and Daddy sitting there worrying about whether your baby was going to live or die, would you question everything? Would your whole value system come under scrutiny? Would you wonder if maybe it was right all that time that you spent explaining to them how Darwin's theory of natural selection and Darwin's theory of evolution was just a demonic, Satan-inspired poppycock that was designed to lead the believers astray? As your kid was laying there in a hospital bed face down with a ventilator hose jammed down their throat, with the machine doing all their breathing for them, with another tube up their nose or through a hole in their belly feeding nutrition to them, with a catheter up their urethra and something on their behind to catch the diarrhea that occasionally flows out, with a cocktail of drugs running through an intravenous line into their hand or their arm to make sure that they remained immobile. Those kinds of drugs are called paralytics. They keep you from being able to move. You probably got your eyes closed, but here's the real hell and horror of it. You can still hear. And so hour after hour, day after day, you hear the hiss and the whir and the clanks and the beeps of the various pumps and the chuffing of the ventilator. And suddenly, maybe somewhere in the deeply sedated portion of what used to be your party-going being. You wonder if maybe this, instead of some lake of eternal fire, is what hell really is. And it turns out hell didn't have anything to do with how you loved someone. No. It didn't have anything to do with whether or not you followed a brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. It didn't matter if you bowed 5 times a day toward Mecca or wore the special headgear that would assure that Yahweh took kindly to you. All that mattered was that you had the common fucking sense not to LARP and smolik and grabulate and garble on and waller all over your pals because you just wanted to party. And mama can't be there and daddy can't be there. And maybe there's some firing neuron in your brain that wonders if that last time you was home, did you maybe kill Papaw and Meemaw? All of that. All of that. Because that has a distinct likelihood of being real. Oh, and by the way, somebody needs to maybe send Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, to have a little chit-chat with Tuscaloosa City Councilwoman Sonia McKinstry and Fire Chief Randy Smith. Because it was only a couple of days ago now, wasn't it, that Rand Paul could be heard in a Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee hearing, upbraiding Dr. Anthony Fauci and explaining to him about how it is impossible for youngins to give the Rona to each other. Turns out, as is always the case, Kentucky Junior Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head were, everybody, wrong! Because being wrong is what these libertarian asshat turds are best at. Turns out maybe the government experts were right after all. Turns out perhaps, no, definitely, that tired old hack Hayek was as wrong as most decent people of ordinary brain have long known he was. Yeah. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, just keeps getting wronger and wronger and wronger. Because, it even affects newborns. Yeah. 4-month-old baby admitted to the hospital with COVID. And now fighting for its young little life. Remember a couple of nights ago we talked about the city manager of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Stan? Well, the mayor, Brenda Bethune, has decided she's kind of, sort of, maybe had a little bit of a change of heart. She got interviewed on MSNBC. And upon being queried by the reporter about the fact that hundreds of new COVID-19 cases have been linked to people who just had to go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, because it's beautiful. Well, Mayor Bethune said, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Our hotels opened up about 4 weeks ago. I wish we'd done it then, but we didn't have the same issues as we do today. Son of a gun, how about that? South Carolina, Stan, didn't have the coronavirus, novel coronavirus, COVID-19, 4 weeks ago. We didn't have the same issues as we do today, so we are seeing increases in cases, and I think we have to do this mask order. Supposedly, the Myrtle Beach City Council was going to be having a conversation about a mask order today. Maybe this evening. One can only imagine the feed'em fuckers who'll be there screaming and screeching about the Bible and HIPAA and OSHA and about how they got a breathing condition that they don't got to tell nobody about because it's a mystery. She wishes she had the information 4 weeks ago that she has today. But when it comes around to actually acknowledging that people come into your virus-infested city and LARPing and smollicking and tossing around on one another, all butthole to belly button and grabulating and garbifying on each other, well, we don't know for sure that that's why they're getting it. There's no way to determine exactly where everyone contracted the virus. Or if people coming here brought it here, our cases were well under control. And when we opened up back up to our visitors, that's when we, you know, our gentlemen callers, no, that's when we started seeing those spikes. I'm not one to place blame on anyone. I think we have to deal with the situation that we're given, and placing blame doesn't help solve our issues. Or, as Republicans always fucking say, this is no time for playing the blame game. Yeah. Thank you. Updating us. David in South Carolina, Stan, says Myrtle Beach City Council has approved a face mask mandate through Labor Day. Oh, there will be pissing and moaning and howling and shrieking and screaming among the freedom set. I want to be free to get on a ventilator. Yeah. Jesus. And remember, David in South Carolina, Stan reminds us, McGovna told us we could go out on a boat if and we were kin to everybody in the boat. I do not think he ever rescinded this rule. Yeah. Because feed them, right? Sure. And by the way, the Tuscaloosa City Council will likely pass a masking ordinance of their own, requiring the wearing of them when in public spaces. Yeah. As to those COVID parties, Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Bob, them parties is just the 21st century version of snake handling. They's just testing their faith. Ain't that the damn truth? Another rude idiot like Rand Paul, Jack in Shreveport, says, I heard a clip of some lieutenant governor asshole screaming about he doesn't need Fauci because he's been wrong on everything, and all of us know better than him of what to do. Was it the Texas lieutenant governor, maybe? Dan Patrick? That certainly sounds like old Dan. Because stupid. And but before anybody starts engaging in any, and you know what? Nobody knows this better than Californians. Because California has had, it's a big state with a huge population. And so consequently, you're going to have plenty of everything when it comes to social ills in a state that big. For God's sakes, it's a thousand miles long north to south. Well, just to the immediate north of California lies Oregon. And Oregon, I guess somebody in Oregon felt like they needed to prove that there was some freedom lovers there, too. In this case, it's made worse by the fact that they were cops. Not just cops, but the best-trained law enforcement officers in the entire state, members of the Oregon State Police, four of whom went galumphing into a coffee shop in Oregon, where the security cameras caught them. And this isn't one of those cases where you need body cam footage or they can turn the camera off. No, according to the Oregonian, the assistant manager at this coffee shop, upon seeing four unmasked cops walk into a public accommodation wherein a mask is required by order of the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown. Well, that assistant manager, who is taking his life in his hands by going to work every day, because if he doesn't, he's fucked. He said, officers, we have a masking ordinance in this state, and I would ask you to please put on your mask if you're going to stay here and get coffee. And that's when one of the state troopers looked at Travis Boss, the assistant manager, and said, Governor Brown has no authority to take our civil liberties. We're not going to wear masks. Fuck Kate Brown. Now, remember, this isn't officer friendly from the busted knuckle Oregon Police Department. This isn't even deputy truculent of Sister Fister County. This is a member of the Oregon State Police, which answers directly to Governor Kate Brown. Governor Brown has no authority to take our civil liberties. We aren't going to wear masks. Fuck Kate Brown. One would think that would be a level of insubordination worthy of immediate termination. Yet one would be wrong because, of course, cop union. Captain Timothy Fox, who is the spokesman for the Oregon State Police, having been informed of the shitty scofflaw behavior of these members of the Oregon State Police, said, OSP is early in the investigation, but if found to be true, we are thoroughly disappointed and expect our troopers to follow the governor's executive orders and be examples in the community. Oh, okay. So they're only going to be thoroughly disappointed if the allegations are found to be true. One might think that the security camera footage would be maybe of high enough resolution that you might even be able to read Trooper Scofflaw's lips as he declares, "Fuck Kate Brown." Now, this dude has no more, well, okay, there's different scams that let him get higher degrees, but maybe Trooper Truculent has a bullshit master's degree in something like criminal justice or public policy or basket weaving, you know. But he ain't no lawyer. Because if he had even had so much as a fucking cup of coffee in law school, he would realize that, yes, Kate Brown does have the ability, the constitutional ability, to act in the best interests of the public health of the people of the state of Oregon. But Captain Timothy Fox isn't going to be thoroughly disappointed unless it turns out to be true. Even though it already appears to be. But, well, you can... All right, Trooper Truculent. Yes, we know you're home on paid vacation. I mean, administrative leave. But we found out that you did say that the governor couldn't take your civil liberties away, and yes, she can. And that you did say, fuck Kate Brown. So, Trooper Truculent, I hope you're paying attention. We are thoroughly disappointed in you. Now, that's all. Go back to work. Any member of law enforcement who behaves in that fashion needs to never be anywhere near a badge or a gun or a souped-up cruiser ever, 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 ever again. Any dissent? Well, exactly, Stephen, New York. Subject line, California. The maggots ye have always with ye. They're not, we can't isolate them. We can't just make sure that they all stay in Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee and Arkansas and so forth, Texas. Granted, they exist in higher concentrations there, perhaps. But, like the virus, they spread. Jesus. Billable Rick. Bob, stop ruining my late lunch in the Pacific time zone with your talk about ventilators. I know, most of us prefer not to think of that. But that's the reality. And quite frankly, there should be handy dandy video that we could all haul up on our little pocket computers but we don't want to get close enough to these vermin, these maskless vermin, not to show them. Or to show them, I should say. But we need video of somebody laying face down with a garden hose down their throat, struggling to stay alive. And saying, you know, if a mask bothers you that much, you're really going to hate this. But here's the thing. Could we have your name and address, please, so that when you do get somebody sick, we can do something about you? Or are you just willing to do what you're doing in hopes that there will be no consequences, no repercussions? And you'll just go about your business. And hope it isn't you. Maggots. Maggots. Damn. Hey, thanks, Jeremy, as we reach the end of the first hour of the program. Thank you, Jeremy. for jumping in. Got us down to 395. And thank you to Todd. Thank you, Todd, most kindly, for getting us down to 385. That's most helpful, and I hope other folks will jump in alongside you. Thank you. Silent R. Lamar, news from California. Now, there you go again, Bob. If they want to thin out the stupid, let them. Be a sport, Bob. Stupid is as stupid does. We won't miss the stupid for long. Look on the bright side. America's IQ might come up a bit. I know, Silent R, but the thing is, we can't make, there's no way to make sure that only the stupid people get it. And the thing is, because they're stupid people, as we've seen in Alabama and Rockland County, New York, they're more likely to spread it to innocent victims. People trying really hard not to wind up face down on a ventilator. And wind up that way because somebody just had to go and they got, I got to go to a party. It's summer. It's party time. Shit, I'm yearning for some of that. But hopefully I've got enough in the way of brain power to recognize that's a suicidal act. And a homicidal act. Well, it's not a matter of winning and losing, Silent R. Okay, Bob, you win. MAGA, make America gasp again. Now, that's a cowbell for Silent R.
Well, if found to be true, we will be thoroughly disappointed in Trooper Truculent.
On the other hand, if you cough on a cop and say, you know, I might have it, I don't know, I may be in some, well, you know, they'll charge you with attempted murder and throw your ass in jail, which is a considerably more significant assault on civil liberties than merely being asked to wear a mask. And see, I don't talk about this business of what ventilators are like, theoretically. This is real-world experience. It was November of 1996 when my mother went into the University of Alabama Birmingham Medical Center, best hospital in Alabama, not saying much, for surgery to remove her vastly inflamed spleen. She was 71 years old. No, 72. No, 71. Sorry, ciphering. By the end of November, she'd been put on a vent. She never got off it and spent 6 months on it. And because we weren't talking about a pandemic or anything, my father got to go and see her for 30 minutes at a time, three times a day. And hold his darling's hand and talk to her because he knew she could hear him. And I was there for some of it. And they told us exactly what they were doing. They told us all the processes about having to bring staff in to move her arms and move her legs, how they dealt with bodily functions, about things like atrophy and pneumonia, kidneys burned up by antibiotics. And she had $1 million worth of Medicare coverage. So they kept her on that vent until that $1 million was gone. And then they had a heart-to-heart conversation with my dad and me and said it was time for my dad and me to stop playing God and let her go. And every ticking second of every passing minute of every creeping hour of every grievous day of every miserable week of every one of those six agonizing months, she passed with some degree, scant though it was, of consciousness, and never, ever, ever got off the vent until she was dead. And they pulled it out. If one does survive the vent, one will survive with damage to larynx, lungs, heart, very likely. Significant muscle atrophy of up to 50% of one's musculature. And these assholes, like these Oregon troopers wandering around saying, "Yeah, but my civil liberties." What do you suppose happens to their civil liberties on that vent? I despise them with the heat of 1,000 suns. And the assholes in Congress, the Louis Gohmerts and the Matt Gaetzes. All of them. Jim Shorts, Jordan, and Rand Paul. Each and every one of them are, for all intents and purposes, engaged in a homicidal conspiracy. Oh, I had a note from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Nothing like a real martini with the grande olives in the traditional generous glass. Hold the glass by the stem to keep the liquid cold, Bombay gin. The Amtrak headquarters at 30th Street Station in Philadelphia, the Ray Restaurant and Bar, thick marble bar and super adult-sized bar stools, real throwback to the 1920s. Only top-shelf gin is available. And I'm one of those who think, you know, you make it with vodka, it's not a martini. That's why they call it a vodka martini. Martinis are gin. Yeah. Well, as expected, the call did come through on the stress line. And so I think we've got Paul from Parts Unknown with us. Are you there, Paul?
Yes, I am, Bob. Can you hear me? Am I coming through okay?
You're great, and it's great to hear from you.
Thanks. It's nice to be not working when your show's on.
Wonderful to hear from you. And you've been keeping some hellacious hours, as far as I can tell, based on our correspondence.
Yeah, I work from... Eastern Standard Time point of view, I work from 5:30 to 2 in the morning every day, Monday through Friday.
That's nuts. I mean, how do you cope? Because, you know, you got something like that, your days and nights are completely upside down and backwards.
It took about a month to get a rhythm down. It was a huge change in March with everyone's schools closing. We've got a 9-year-old at home. So it was, you know, changing the lesson plan. And my wife works from home. She works with the East Coast in London. So she's working from like 7 in the morning to 3, 4 in the afternoon. So I would work with the little one on school and get things going when I got up around, 9 a.m. my time. And then, I head off to work and got about an hour of unparented time just to goof off until my wife was finished that sort of the routine we've had to work on. And then we just try to spend as much time as we can with each other on the weekend.
So all things being equal, how are you holding up, and how's your wife holding up, and how's your daughter holding up?
Pretty good. We went camping for 8 days. So a little out of the news loop, we got back 2 days ago. But we went with two other families who isolated themselves from everyone else 2 weeks or longer before the trip, and now we're going to isolate away from everyone else for another 2 weeks to make sure that nothing's transmitted. And it was three families and a total of 4 kids. And we do it every year, but it was pretty wild this year because the kids just had pent up social energy. They couldn't really hang or have play dates for 3 months. And you put them in 8 days in the wilds of the nature of the California redwoods and Southern Oregon and swimming in lakes. And they just had a really good time. They just never slept.
Well, sometimes it's good just to wear them out.
Yeah, they finally, because, the solstice was just a couple weekends ago, and our trip started the day after the solstice. So, they were up until 10, o'clock or later every night, and they were up at like 7 every morning, and we thought for sure that they'd run out of energy, and they never did. They kept us up late, and then the last day of the trip before we packed up and everyone was heading home, they finally, right around like 8:30, 9 o'clock, they just suddenly ran out of energy. Wanted to go to bed.
So, if I may ask, and I don't want to intrude on anything that might be proprietary or not for public consumption, but what is your take on where we are right now?
Well, I don't have the latest numbers. I've done some reading in the past couple of days, so I'm not up to date, but to quote Scott, we're screwed. You're already seeing people like Texas starting to re-implement lockdown procedures. When we were lifting lockdown procedures a couple months ago in May, May 15th was everyone was trying to get done. Everyone at my work not everyone. We had a conversation with quite a few people in the ring of the couple of labs that talk to each other on the night shift, and we're just like, it's too early. Does anyone else think this is on time? And no one else did, and one thought there'd be a resurgence that would come up because it's not great. And I didn't like what I saw around the town I live in April when everything was tense in New York with NYC. I'd say about 70% of people I see on a daily basis or my wife would. We're wearing masks, and between April and Memorial Day, that dropped to about 10 to 15%. And there's just no one wearing masks. We got some friends of ours were working in Florida. When the pandemic hit the first time, they work in the hospitality industry. They lost their jobs. They got a job offer out in Oregon. They traveled from Florida up to the New York area, visiting friends and family on the East Coast a little bit, socially distant, and then headed west across I-84. And they told us stories about how they'd be the only people in a grocery store in Nebraska wearing masks and not understanding, like, with the meat plants outbreaking all over Nebraska and Kansas, why people were just, people not only were the only ones wearing masks, but they were getting dirty looks. Like, how dare you wear a mask? Like, hey, we've traveled 20 states in the past 14 days. Want us for anything? So, kind of between the daily news reports and just stories I've heard from friends and things I've seen myself, it's just not enough. There's not enough people wearing masks, and this was inevitable. But to remind folks, it takes about 3 weeks So right now, it's July 2nd. So you're looking at mistakes. You're looking at the outcome of mistakes people made with all these increased tests and everything and these daily record spikes happening. Those things happened 3 weeks ago. Those are based on decisions made on June 15th, for lack of a better term. And
well, it's interesting you describe it in that way, because when you did, the first thing I thought of, Paul, was the speed of light. And the distance in terms of, you know, we say that a star is X number of light years from Earth. So if a star is 15 light years from Earth, that means that it took the light from that star traveling at light speed 15 years to reach us.
Right.
And in a way, what you just described is a similar chronometry, if you will.
Right. And if the light from that planet snuffed out 5 years ago, wouldn't know it 10 more.
Right. So you said you hadn't seen the numbers lately. I went ahead and called up the Johns Hopkins map, and it tells me that we have 128,643 dead in the United States.
Yeah, I'm glad it's that low. Given the behavior I was seeing at the beginning of June, I was afraid we were going to cross 150,000 by the end of
June. Well, I was afraid we were going to be at 200,000.
Well,
I was just going to point out that there is that fear out there that whatever the number is, it's off by a factor of 10.
Perhaps. I know that they are pulling, government agencies are pulling shenanigans like Florida and Texas,
Hey, Paul, not to interrupt, but I really want us to get the most out of this conversation for the sake of the community. You've got a lot of noise. I don't know if the mic's moving around or whatever.
Hold on, I'll switch.
Okay.
Is that better?
So far, it seems to be, yes.
I'm outside in a field, walking my dog and throwing the frisbee for her, so the wind picked up.
Okay. Well, I just wanted, like I said, I wanted to maximize so people could hear everything you had to say.
This thing is like a giant locomotive. It takes a long time to accelerate and decelerate. So, yeah, people are making bad decisions, but it still takes a little time for that train engine to rev up and really get cooking. And by the time it's going fast and running over people and you get, 1,000 deaths, 2,000 deaths a day, it takes quite a lot of energy and effort to slow it down.
And is that effort to slow it down present, as far as you can tell?
It's the same thing that happened in April all over again. Politicians, for better or for worse, can't really take action until the public can see the danger right in their face. And by that time, you're going to get worse for 3 more weeks. So I've been out of the news. Is this week the week that everyone's talking about shutting down and putting mandatory masks on and all this stuff? I think Oregon did it last week.
Well, we were just talking about, in the course of the first hour of the program, you've got unlikely places like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, finally saying, we need to put in a mask ordinance. But it feels a whole lot like closing the barn doors after the barn is already, burnt down to ash.
Yeah, it is. In a sense, so basically, if everyone took action this week, and it's July 2nd, by July 23rd is when you actually start seeing the impact from those policies. So as bad as it is now, I would expect it to get worse every week for the next 3 weeks. You're going to see continual record cases, assuming we keep testing and keep telling the truth. You're going to see more deaths. my last email talked about Yakima Hospital being overwhelmed or mm-hmm. soon to be overwhelmed,
right.
and it got overwhelmed big time. And you're seeing pockets like that in Brassica, Kansas, and you know, just based on epidemiological guessing, if I'm not sick and I'm in a hot zone, if I can move my family out to another area for like a summer vacation until this dies down, then I will. But and I could be asymptomatic carriers, and this thing goes where I travel. And that's kind of what's happened in May and June, I think, is that you've had a lot of travel and cross community exposures. So, you know, and we're not doing contact tracing, but basically, you know, we're not finding, we can't prove or figure out, but it would be a solid educated guess that people that got sick in Yakima were visited by people in Seattle or people in Yakima went and visited friends and family somewhere in California or Montana or elsewhere where there were hot spots and got sick and then came back. And so we don't know. It's not just that you close the barn door after it burnt down. We don't know which barn door the horse left out of at this point. We have no idea what barn door to close that, even though it's too late.
Well, Paul, for those who may not know, you've told us in the past that you work for a company that makes a component of one of the tests.
They make the test. I work for Thermo Fisher Scientific. They're an international company. They are basically the Home Depot or Lowe's of the lab world, where it's a hardware store that if you want to upgrade or improve your house, you can find whatever you need there, paint, pipe, whatever. This is sort of the same thing. If you want to set up a lab, you can come to our company and buy whatever chemicals or machines or analyzers. Anything that you, even benchtops, anything that you might want to put in a lab and anything you might want to test. And we have over 170 sites worldwide. And this particular site I work at makes two of the components for the COVID-19 test kit that we sell. The other components are made at a couple of other sites in America. And then they're just all assembled, I believe, I don't know if it's Austin or in Carlsbad, California. One of those two major manufacturer sites is where the final pieces are assembled and then shipped to customers.
Well, I ask you because I saw a story earlier today saying that the supply chain for the tests themselves, as things get worse, may become severely stressed. Have you seen anything to indicate that?
No, but I have not. I haven't like looked at work email or anything in 2 weeks, so I haven't seen anything. I know that part of the stress that we have to avoid is that our site makes the dye that fluoresces in the presence of the COVID-19 DNA or RNA, whichever it's made out of, a specific sequence unique to it that breaks off. And the dye bonds to, and so basically the dye bonds to DNA in general, and then it's programmed to bind to a specific set of DNA, and then the DNA is cleaved at a certain point, and the only reason that your DNA would cleave at the point where the dye is attached to the DNA is because you're COVID, reportedly. And then when that DNA breaks off, it leaves the dye out there by itself at the end of the chain, which then lets it light up under fluorescence. And so that's sort of kind of how it works. And if someone who's got COVID touches or handles or sneezes into that dye, anytime that dye is used, potentially there's virus now in it, whether you had it or not, when we test it, and things will just keep coming out positive. But I know there have been supply chain problems with swabs and other sterile kit of parts, because those are typically made overseas because they're cheaper. And supply chains are weaker, but I can't speak to the specificity of supply chain versus our test. I can tell you that we have made all the components we make at our particular site. Last I checked, we made enough for like a 4 month supply, assuming that the government would be, or someone would be, purchasing upwards of 500,000 tests a day from us. We had made a 2 month supply of everything we can make at our site. But that's all I know.
That's running 24/7, right?
No. Two shifts. So 16, 16, 16, 5.
Okay, and then I think you told us in the past that the remaining time is used for cleaning and re-sterilization and that sort of thing. Did I understand correctly?
Yeah. Between the shifts, we have a cleaning crew that comes in and sterilizes everything. When I go to work, I take my temperature personally twice a day, whether I'm working or not. And then when I go to work, I get my temperature taken again. We have to wear a mask the whole time. They have maximum occupancy of people wearing masks outside each room or meeting room or conference or lab or anything. And at no time can you have more people in there than has been determined to keep social distance and breathing safe.
So
they've really done their job.
So I think it's probably safe to say, Paul, that you spend more time in a mask than most ordinary Americans.
Very much so. I spend, assuming I don't go anywhere to do shopping or anything, I spend approximately 45 hours a week wearing a mask. 40 of those wearing a mask and lab safety glasses that fog up, even the anti-fog ones. And so you can't see anything sometimes as you're trying to work with stuff.
And let's be upfront. It's not comfortable.
No. Especially when you have to work on something in the cold room. Then life gets real fun real fast. Then it's every 30 seconds, take off your glasses real quick and use one of those anti-fogging lights on it and put it back because the temperature differentiation in the cold room is so different. It's so large between your body heat that your glasses fog up completely in like 30 seconds. You can't see anything.
And those are those glasses are because the virus can enter through the eyes, correct?
We always wear glasses. It's general chemical hygiene safety because you any of the stuff we get in, you don't want anything in your eyes. The chemicals we work with are dangerous, or we're working with live bacteria. I mean, this is before COVID stuff. Live bacteria and such. I also want to state that I personally don't work on the COVID-19 test components. If I am working on the COVID-19 test components, which I can do, I am able to do that. It's a lot like the Speaker of the House being president. Something's gone horribly wrong in the lab if that were to happen. I'm like 10th in line to work on those pieces, and 9 people before me have to get sick.
Or be exposed. I have to say, as an aside, Paul, you are a master of analogy. That's very good. Insofar as you do, is it more uncomfortable? You said, and if I don't go to the grocery store, et cetera. So is it more uncomfortable wearing a mask outside in the larger world than it is for those 40 plus hours a week in the lab?
Yes, only because my wife made the cloth masks that we use. We have to use a standard surgical mask, disposable for the labs. You might have seen them because people do wear them. It's the mask that's got the blue outside and the white inside and the two little kind of elastic white loops that go around your ears.
Right.
My wife made some cloth masks for daily use because she's got some sewing skills, and these have the long ties that you two sets of ties that you tie around your head very firmly. And the advantage of that is that it keeps it keeps the mask snug to your face and the nasal bridge tighter, so less warm air gets through and to breathe into your glasses as you're driving. So there's less fogging problems, which is my main issue with wearing them.
Well, I don't know if we've got any little maggot lurkers. No, actually, I know we do. But if you are in a unique position, Paul, to speak directly to them about the issue of masks in public. You are a scientist. Mm-hmm. You are scientifically trained. You are well educated.
Hello.
Yeah, I've got you. Are you there?
Sorry, you tuned out for a second.
Oh, okay.
My message for wearing masks, I guess, would be something that a colleague of mine said in general, which is you absolutely have the right to wear or not wear a mask, and the government cannot force you to wear a mask. You are correct. In the same way that you have the right to eat or not eat, and the government cannot force feed you to stop you from killing yourself. It is the same thing.
And by extension, you have the right not to wear the mask just like you have a right not to stop at a stop sign.
Yes, but the difference is that we can't prove that you're the car that crashed into another car. And even if we did, you're more the legal scholar than I am. I don't think it's prosecutable. I think the only reason it's prosecutable at all is this: you have to prove intent. There were a few cases with HIV that were prosecuted back in the 90s where people had it, they knew they had it, and they were intentionally having unprotected sex with other people to intentionally infect them. And that was prosecutable. And if the Trump administration has taught us anything about the law, it's that ignorance is innocence, apparently, or at least not guilty.
Oh, geez. Yeah, all too true. So, but where, you know, we talked about the 3-week window and everything. Is there, what as to testing itself, to the extent that you follow the broader outlines of it, is there any reason to think? I mean, are you familiar with this concept of pool testing? I've been reading about that the last couple of days. The idea that you would take 100 samples, mix them all together, and test them and see if anybody's got it. And if you come up with 100 zeros, nobody has to be tested again. But if you come up with even one, if you come up with even one virus particle, then you got to go back and retest all 100 people. But there's some school of thought that says that this might expand the universe of testing more than where we are now.
No, I haven't heard that. I'd have to look at the science. But my gut reaction is that how are you doing the samples? If you're diluting it 100 times, which is two orders of magnitude, could you amplify the, does the test take longer? Does it need to amplify the DNA more? Do you have to wait 6 or 7 days for results? You know, I mean, I would do that with people that I would be fairly certain are not, don't have or do not have it, are not going to test positive. But if it's just one out of that 100, could that diluted pool be so dilute that the test doesn't pick it up under normal circumstances? That would be my concern.
Well, the way they're describing it, it is 100. It's 100 samples all mixed together, and you test. And then if it comes back positive, then you go and retest everybody to find out who does and doesn't. Let me ask you about it. You know, it was more than a month ago, maybe two. Now, when the White House was ballyhooing the 15-minute test, that then turned out to have a false negative rate that was right at 50%, right at coin toss.
Right, which is exceptionally bad.
Well, it's no test at all.
Right.
Has there been any improvement along those lines? Why does it take a week, I guess, is what I'm asking, with the standard tests?
Because the test that we make, the one that takes 4 or 5 days, is basically, let's see, I'm trying to like, so I'll just talk in technical terms. So basically what happens is that you have the DNA so I'm going to swab your nose. There's a mix of DNA in there. There's going to be DNA from you, DNA from any kind of bacteria that you might, or spores from mold that you might have inhaled through your nose. Okay. And there's virus and bacterial DNA in there. So I'm going to swab deep and get as much as I can. And I'm going to put it, that sample into, I'm going to liquidize it and put everything on the swab into a liquid. And I've got all this DNA in there. And then I'm going to, put in some TAC enzyme, which is a enzyme that replicates any kind of DNA. It's found in it was discovered, and this process was built in 1985 by the scientist that developed it, got the Nobel Peace Prize. And so he found this enzyme in hot springs and volcanoes, this rare bacteria that has this enzyme that will just, you know, replicate any DNA. Everybody's got their own DNA replicators, but it's specific to them. Obviously, human replication is interested in replicating human DNA, not bacteria or viruses. So this thing replicates anything. You put it in there with the DNA, and you put the basics of DNA, the 4 amino acids in there, in great quantity. And then you heat it, and do a series of heating and cooling. And every time you heat it, that DNA unzips, into two pieces. and then the TAC enzymes come and replicate the mirror image of each strand. And then you cool it, and those strands recombine into new strands. And then you heat it again, which separates them off, which allows the TAC enzyme to make another copy. And these heating and cooling processes, depending on the tester, on average, like 6 hours. They typically go through two full cycles a day. And every time it goes through a cycle, the DNA doubles exponentially and just keeps doubling and doubling. And so you get two doubles a day over the course of 3 or 4 days. Now we have a large pool of DNA to work with of various kinds. And then we can run this dye test, which tests specifically for the viral DNA, but you've got to replicate the viral DNA into a point of concentration and amount that you can test it. That's why it takes so long.
That makes I don't get all the technical aspects, but the general makes perfectly good sense to me.
The shorter tests are testing for antigens, which they're testing for antigens or antibodies. So when a virus infects your cell, it immediately, one of the things it does is it alters the proteins on the surface of the cell in a unique way, and which tells other viruses to not infect that cell again. You know, this one's taken, don't waste your life. Because viruses are a lot like sperm. They have one shot to deliver their DNA, and that's it.
Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
And so basically, as a survival mechanism, the virus has a way of communicating to other viruses, don't land here and inject your viral load and waste yourself, because I've already got this covered. So find some new territory. And so we don't know this, but, and so what you can do is you can do an antigen test on a cell sample and see if those antigens, the unique proteins changed on the cell membrane is there. The virus, it's hard to know what that antigen is. It takes time. And then the other one is the antibody test, which is after your immune system has fought the virus, it's created antibodies. And those antibodies, in very basic terms, have been key for that unique protein.
Hey, Paul. Paul, I hate to interrupt, but apparently you've moved into somewhere where your cell's not so good.
Sorry. Let me move out of here. Sorry. But anyways, for the antibody test, what happens with the human immune system in very basic terms is there's a cell that finally locks onto that unique protein change in the cell that a virus makes to tell other viruses not to come in. It locks onto that and grabs the cell and holds onto it and paints it like a laser painter for a missile target, saying this cell is infected with the virus, and that lets your rest of your immune system pick it out. And when you are recently fought off a virus, those antibodies are in a very high concentration because it's made, you know, billions of them. And so they can easily find the antibody and then test for it. So the antibody tests are faster, I develop usually, but faster in a year. A lot of these tests that they're coming up with, we hope are accurate, but we don't have the time to. We're testing them in real time rather than testing them in the lab and going over numbers to make sure we got it right.
Okay. Any thoughts on, because we continue to have this this hope of a vaccine dangled in front of us. Do you have any thoughts along those lines? I'm skeptical.
I think that eventually one will come and it will work to varying degrees. Every virus is different, and this virus is very individualistic. Most viruses that species are. And so it's hard to say how effective a vaccine is. But understand that vaccines are important. Okay, fine. The ultimate result, if I inject you with this vaccine and you're immune, like that's the best possible scenario, and it works for everybody. Because there's a certain type of retention, basically. Because I work with diseases in lung tissue, I've been immunized with like versus hepatitis B and everything. And when they put you through the vaccine trial, they test you at the end 2 weeks after the trial is done to see if you've got the titer still in your blood, whether basically did the vaccine stick. And with some people it does, and some people it doesn't. And there's a percentage, you know, that they call in for that. But also, it could just be semi-effective and then reduce the severity of the symptoms. So while it won't make you immune, it will make it maybe, you know, 100 times less likely that you'll die from it, because your body's already had an exposure to something like it, and can therefore, when it encounters the actual corona, it builds up resistance faster, and you'll have less of a reaction to the virus. So any vaccine that is working at any level could really help with the death toll.
Okay, let me pursue just another line. Can you address the question? Can you address the difference between vaccine versus antiviral therapy?
Okay, so a vaccine is a basically a vaccine is the I explained this to a friend of mine that I work out with. You know, why it takes so long to make a vaccine is that you're basically taking the horrible, rabid, gray wolf-sized virus that's killing everybody, and over the course of generations, selectively mutating it into a chihuahua. And then we send the chihuahua at your immune system, which is no real threat, but it's enough of a dog that when the wolf comes around, your body knows how to handle it. That's basically a vaccine. Antiviral is a variety of chemicals that disrupt the virus's replication chemistry. So I'm going to feed you a drug like AZT for the HIV virus, is one of the breakthrough antivirals. It's a drug that disrupts the replication process and in the virus inside the cell, and it can't make more of itself, or it damages part of the virus's, it makes the shell wrong. Like the viruses sometimes are encased in a shell, in a viral protein shell. It makes the shell wrong and puts a big hole in it so that it's not fully protected, and it's like having a big hole. Hey, that's okay, Sadie. Oh, sorry about that. Just 1 second, Bob.
Sure. I really value these conversations because Paul is a wealth of information.
Sorry about this, sir.
We'll just wait patiently.
Sorry about that, Bob. I was sort of in a private area with a dog unleashed and throwing a ball for it, and another dog came around and I had to leash up Sadie.
Okay.
So anyways, yeah, it disrupts that process. So it gives your immune system a fighting chance to take it down, because it can't, viruses only do massive damage to your body once they get into a certain number of replication. You know, they have a certain, when you have billions of virus particles running around your body, and this disrupts their replication. So it slows that process down. It's in effect, you know, mask wearing for the cells. It makes it difficult for a cell that's been infected to explode and transmit to other nearby cells.
Okay, and now everybody wants to know what kind of dog is Sadie.
I'll take a picture and send you because she's adorable. But she's a mutt. We got her from our rescue about 5 years ago. Her mother gave birth at the rescue, and we kept in touch with her litter mate owners, and one of them had a DNA test done on her, and she is mostly Schnauzer and mostly Poodle.
Oh.
There's a breed, she's white, and there's a breed that's called a Schnoodle that people like, except we call her a giant Schnoodle because Schnoodles are about 10 to 15 pounds and she's about 40. She's got some Husky, which gives her the blue eyes.
Oh my God, she's got to be gorgeous.
Oh yeah, she's got some chow in her, which gives her that little chow tail curl to her tail, and about 50% of the roof of her mouth is black. And she's a very friendly, happy people dog and loves getting petted, and is a big, shaggy, huggable little dog. And it's the only dog I've ever seen or owned where people must stop and pet her, like just by seeing her.
She is her own goodwill ambassador.
Yeah.
Let me go back and ask you this, because this was a suggestion for just a line of inquiry, courtesy of Roger in Oregon. Are you hearing anything about reinfection? Is there, what degree of confidence is there that once you've had it, you won't get it again? Because we're seeing stories about people who had it and are getting it again, or people who test negative, you know, they had it, then they test negative, then they test negative, and then bang, they test positive.
Yeah, that's the, we don't know, basically. That's the, in the previous email, I gave the animal to be, remain unnamed because I didn't know it bothered you at the time. I'm sorry about that. Feeling it blind with gloves, where I was saying what we've discovered, this is much more crocodile than that animal that I can't say. So we're finding that it's unique and that there's, we don't know things about it and we don't know what it will do. And so it's not a simple problem to solve, which is why the scientific community is basically saying, we don't know everything about this. It's really important you don't get infected. I can't stress enough that you're getting infected. The biggest problem that scientists have in the community in general is that we don't know how to communicate to other people urgency. Not that we don't know how to do that, but there's this societal expectation that if you're a scientist, you're supposed to be a little bit like Mr. Spock. You're supposed to be very unemotional and very factual and very straightforward. And, you know, that seems a logical captain type speak. But when something's urgent, like climate change, you really want to put emotion into it and go, you know, we have an emergency here. You really need to buckle down and do this. But when we do that, the media or our opponents paint us as emotional or over-exaggerated or being dramatic. We've experienced this problem with climate change, and it's the frustration of, well, you should have been, you know, should have warned us harder with climate change in the 90s when it was happening. And there, and where our response is, there's a few of us that tried that, and you called us overdramatic and emotional and not being factual. So we're stuck in that juxtaposition.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is, our side is always good with, you know. Now, see here, I've got some facts and figures, and if we just understand the facts and figures, we will act accordingly. While the Republicans, okay, on the other hand, say, liberals gonna eat your Bible.
Yeah.
And they understand that in order to succeed at anything, you have to touch people's hearts. That people generally operate with their emotions before they operate with their minds. And that's why the Vulcans were different from the humans.
Yes, I guarantee you that everyone on planet Vulcan would be wearing a mask. So our alarm is that we don't know what this is or how it operates because it's new. And the more we learn about it, the more that we're concerned that anything could happen. It's really a crapshoot. So don't get infected. Don't roll the dice. And the other problem is that, so that from a scientific and tactical point of view, from epidemiology, we have two problems. One, we have a virus that we don't know enough about that is unique enough and showing enough unique signs that we can't, it's hard for us to anticipate exactly how it works or what could happen or how it mutates. The second problem is the public policy to fight it. I came up with a good analogy of these models that say, you know, 200,000 people will die by the end of July or whatever. All these models saying how people are going to die. These models are mathematically accurate, but they're taking in certain assumptions. So let's say that you're standing on the top of a four-story building and you're going to jump. And the model says that if the wind conditions are right, and given the fact that gravity is Earth's gravity, and that you go and you jump feet first and you try to hit the dumpster below, because you're not trying to kill yourself, you're just trying to jump off the building to get away from people trying to kill you, for the sake of argument, you know, you're going to aim for the dumpster. That given those odds, there's, you know, a 50% chance you land in the dumpster and you break your foot. And there's a 50% chance that you miss the dumpster and you hit the sidewalk with your feet and you break your legs and you can't walk for the rest of your life. Like, that's what the model will say. But the model assumes you're going to jump feet first. The model does not assume that for whatever reason, you think it's a good idea to jump head first and not even try to aim for the dumpster. And that's kind of, so these models saying 200,000 deaths by the end of the summer are based on, we'll tell people to wear masks and they'll wear masks. They're based on good public policy instituted by governors and the president that are conservative, that when they start seeing cases rise, you implement it immediately and stop it and not wait for them to get overblown like we have now. So a lot of our problem is we're diving off the building head first and not even trying to hit the dumpster. And we're just going to crack our skulls on the pavement. And if you need proof of that, uh-oh, hold on. Sadie, no, 1 second. Sorry.
Sadie has a mind of her own.
Sorry.
No worries. Sadie's her own girl.
This area is more popular than I anticipated.
Oh, dear. Yeah. So when do you go back to work?
The 6th of July.
So will you have to be retested?
No. That's one of the reasons I came back from the camping trip. So I came back Tuesday. So I have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I have 6 days of isolation. And so that reduces the chances of me having it without having a fever, basically. So the idea being that if I caught it and I'm getting sick from it, I might be spiking a fever Sunday or Monday. And that means I'm not working 2 or 3 days in the lab with being contagious before I have the fever.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, I cannot thank you enough for the wealth of information you have provided us this evening.
You're very welcome. I'm glad I can call in. I have another vacation coming in August. Other than that, I'm going to have to ride in when I can. But
I hope you will, because you are privy to information that many of us aren't. And one of the nicest things about your willingness to share your knowledge and your expertise is the fact that we can have a high interval of confidence in it, to use statistical language.
Yes. Oh, well, it's a high degree of confidence that nothing is confident, which is basically what I'm trying to communicate. A lot of governmental scientists, even since the days of global warming research in the 90s, the government agencies nitpick the most conservative, the least threatening, you know, the lowest numbers, the lowest deaths, the longest, the studies that give you the longest time to make the policy changes. But that's, you know, those are extremes. They're not the average. And so a lot of these reports and models and infection rates and everything are on the conservative side of not politically, just, you know, just numbers wise, because that's what doesn't make politicians and other people shit their pants out of fear.
And there's no better example. There's no better example than climate change.
Yeah. And no one knows exactly what the tipping point is. Much like with climate change, just don't come close to it. Start implementing policies that are better and that are going to help and nip things in the bud. And I'm afraid that eventually Trump or the administration and the Republicans are going to turn against the epidemiological scientists and say, well, they never really told us how devastating this could be, you know, once we pass, like, you know, 1 million or 2 million deaths, if that was in the worst case scenario. And it's just sort of like, yeah, we did. You chose to ignore it. And there's not much we can do about it. I cringe. There have been some moments, I was very proud of Dr. Fauci in the beginning. He's had a couple of press statements that are kind of cringeworthy from a scientific point of view, kind of going, you're really shining the best light possible on this right now. And it's irresponsible for you to do so. But he's also come out in the past couple of weeks with other statements that have been more in line to what people I work with are thinking when it comes to this virus and the epidemiology of it.
Do you have any doubt at all about what he says about the possibility of 100,000 100,000 per day diagnoses?
Only if you can get the testing up to that level. It's not an, you know, I'm ashamed of our testing. I put an email to you before that we should, I mean, we should have, by June 1st, we should have been at 500,000 tests a day or a million tests a day. I don't understand. There's no, I am not qualified to be president, Bob. I'm not qualified for Dr. Fauci's job. But after seeing some of the stuff, I feel like I could do it better drunk than they're doing it currently. Because I have no real experience in public health, but I know enough of the science to go, okay, here's what you need. I may not know how to make a gourmet cookie, but I know how to make a cookie. I know the basics of what go into it. And I saw a picture with Trump way back in March, I think, or April, where he had a meeting with a bunch of heads of biotech corporations. The CEO of my company was in that picture. And I can't believe that at no point in the meeting was there not discussed a plan of basically how many tests can you get me and how fast can they get here? I don't care what the cost is. You know, I need to be burning through, 100 million tests a month.
Yeah, ramp it up as though it were something you would do during wartime.
Right, exactly. And the only time he's invoked the Defense Powers Act was to make sure that meat kept going. That was it. Like, and that's important. I mean, I think people should get fed. I think that you should need to do adjustments to get people fed. I understand that feeding America and other people is important. But you got to ramp up the testing, public health, drive-in screenings like Korea. I mean, there's so many things that we could do to make this better. The EU has stopped travel for America because we are screwing this up. I said...
Embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I said, people have to understand that America didn't drop the ball on this so much as they're not even on the field. They're not. This has to be a mobilization effort akin to the level of 9/11 in terms of just America deaths. Where are the tests? Where is the funding? Where is the press demanding answers? You know, I don't care whose spokesperson you have out there, press secretary, vice president, another X people Americans have died today. Another Y number of people Americans have died this week. What are you going to do about it? And the numbers keep going up. You clearly do not have a handle on this. What is your plan? The virus is not sentient. You don't need to keep it secret from the virus. What's your plan? That's my opinion.
Well, I think it is an informed and scientifically and politically accurate one. All I can say again, Paul, is thank you for being willing to share your expertise with us, and thank you for the hard and dangerous work you're doing. I hope, and hope is a fragile and diaphanous thing, but I hope you will continue to stay as safe as you are trying to stay, and I hope the same for your wife and your child. Strictly as a parental thing, what are your thoughts on going back to school for your youngin?
September is a long time away. Ask me in August. It's right now. Hell no, but I mean, this is our second bite of the apple. We might lock it down and get it right this time. Wearing these masks are a lot like the anti-vaxxer crowd. If we don't have a certain level of people, and I don't know what that percentage is, but I'll say 90%. If we can get 90% of the Americans to wear masks, this problem goes down sharply, quickly, and effectively. Just like having 95% herd immunity for vaccines. The moment you drop below a certain threshold, all hell breaks loose and you got the measles again. You got corona again. So it just depends on how many times we're going to have to open and close and open and close and open and close our economy until people get it. Or until a lot of people die.
Or close and have the will to stay closed until we actually reach those benchmarks that CDC was talking about all along. Because Texas, South Carolina, Florida, all these asshole states went ahead and reopened before they had even qualified for phase one. They just did it anyway.
Correct.
Georgia.
And then the other, the more diabolical, evil, sociopathic part of my mind goes, if I'm Trump, is there a benefit to me of having a spike during voting?
And of course, the answer to that, Paul, is yes, because statistically, Republicans always benefit from low turnout. Democrats benefit from high turnout.
Right. There's a benefit to me trying to open in, say, September, October, early October, but probably mid-September, right after Labor Day. You know, there's a benefit to me being an evil, you know, James Bond villain, to saying, hey, everyone's good, everything's safe, go out and play. Oh, we got to shut things down until after the election. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no voting for
you. Wear masks. Yeah, wear masks, everybody. And then the other part of it, that discussion that I've had, is these evictions, which is the other diabolical, evil James Bond plan, which is basically when this wave of evictions happens and you're kicked out of your house, how quick do these Republican caging schemes come and verify that you no longer live at the address you used to live at because you got thrown out of your house and now you can't vote?
Oh, wow.
I don't know how you vote if you're homeless. That is a question. I can tell you that I moved from my home in the Vancouver, Washington area to parts unknown at the end of October, beginning of November of 2012, and I did not vote in the 2012 election for Barack Obama. I didn't vote for anybody because it was just, you know, I thought he was going to win. My vote didn't matter. And it was just too complicated trying to figure it out while I was moving and getting ready for a new job, that it just didn't make sense.
Well, you might, when we talk about why wear a mask or don't wear a mask, you might find this interesting, Paul. It's the story of a woman who owns a vintage shop in Phoenix, Arizona. It's called Antique Sugar. Mm-hmm. And she's causing a bit of a stir because the sign she put on her storefront is getting national attention.
No, this can't be good.
No, it is.
Oh, good.
She had previously put up a nice, friendly sign that says, "Please wear a mask so we can stay open." Didn't work, especially not in Arizona.
Yeah.
So she came up with a new one because this is an antique shop, vintage clothing, you know, consignment, things like that. And her new sign, Paul, reads, "We'll be happy to debate the efficacy of masks with you when this is all over and you come in to sell your dead grandmother's clothes. TLDR, masks required."
Nice.
It's working.
I hope so. I hope it'll get better. I think it'll get better. I believe it'll get better. But right now I'm just trying to let people know that it's a real danger. Another thing I can tell folks, one of the conspiracy theories that I've had to like ward off in public, because I was just on the phone talking to my dad. My parents are moderate Republicans. You know, call them Mitt Romney Republicans. They're big fans of Mitt Romney. And they're in their 70s and they watch Fox News. And they're not like crazy, crazy brainwashed, but I keep calling them every weekend and telling them, I don't care what you see on the TV, you're not going outside without a mask, and you need to treat the world like Adrian Monk and wipe things down and stay safe. Don't listen to the news. Don't listen to anybody. Listen to your son with a freaking science degree that you don't pay for. Wear the damn mask.
The Monk reference is good, too. I take it they're Monk fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. You know, just be paranoid about it and be careful. And stay alive. But I was telling my dad that because I call him every weekend and I remind him every weekend it's not safe yet. And I was outside in public like I am now, and someone overheard that conversation and said, "You know, it's a man-made virus created by China."
You know, you drop into redneck almost as easily as I do. It makes me wonder, Paul.
I'm originally born from Seattle, so just good with accent. But my father was born in Harlan, Kentucky. We joke that he's the only man that made We joke that he's the only man that ever made it out of Harlan alive.
Exactly. You'll never leave Harlan alive. First thing I thought of. Yeah, but he did.
So, yeah. But she said that, and a colleague of mine came up with this great analogy that I'll pass on to you, that he's the same friend that had to bail at the grocery store because they weren't using proper social distancing and pick up his refried beans elsewhere for his family's dinner that night. Was this, he said, a man-made virus is a lot like looking at a grafted tree, if you've ever seen one of those. That's where they graft two types of fruit trees together, so it's like half a pear tree and half an apple tree grafted together, and you can see the grafting scar. And it doesn't, you don't need to be a botanist to recognize that tree is not natural, because it's so obvious. And it's the same with this virus. If it was truly a man-made virus, the scientists would be able to identify it as quickly as you would be looking at a grafted tree, that's not a naturally grown tree. And there's no conspiracy theory to it. It's just that simple look. And yes, evil China could have developed technology to mask the virus to make it look that natural. But if they had that level of technology, you could do so much more damage with it. There would be so much, you could manipulate viruses and genes on that level. You'd be able to create all sorts of things that would defeat us on a biological weapon level. So no, it's not a man-made virus.
No, of course not. But yeah, try explaining that to the, yeah, I know. Well, you're getting lots of good wishes and lots of appreciation for what you've offered up, Paul. Steve in New York saying, thanks, Paul. Stay safe.
You're welcome, Hart family. And I, the only bad part I feel about calling in is I don't think I lift anyone's spirits by just telling them what's going on. I don't want to depress people.
No, but you know, it's like that sign that hangs in the meeting halls of 12-step programs. Reality spoken here.
Yes, and we have to deal with reality.
And Jeremy just wrote in and said, Bob, stop telling us how smart Paul is, and the rest of us are just getting out of the primal sludge. Yeah,
I'm not that smart. Trust me, I buy lottery tickets.
Well, no, that's not smart or not smart. A lottery ticket is $2, $3.
Yep.
Tax on the unreasonably optimistic, a $3 voluntary tax on the unreasonably optimistic.
And that's in the end what gives me hope, because that is America, is unreasonably optimistic. I think that's kind of how the Constitution was written.
I think you're right. Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, I never understood the arguing over where the virus came from. Like, does that make it more or less lethal? Or, you know, Jesus, the stupid. And I get that too.
And I'll leave you with something else a colleague of mine said to me at work, as sort of a joke. And they said, because we were always like, why are they not acting? Why are they living in such ignorance? And he came up with the idea, I think what propagandists and drug dealers have in common is that things never go well for them once they start using their own supply.
Bingo.
And I think that they believe the bullshit they're saying.
I think you're right. Well, Paul from Parts Unknown, thank you so kindly for everything. I look forward to our next chance to talk again. And in the meantime, anytime you feel like putting words to, I don't know, putting words to screen, pixels to screen or whatever, know that your notes are always appreciated here.
All right. Thanks, Bob. You and the Horan family have a nice and safe 4th of July. Stay socially distant, and everybody stay alive until Election Day.
Exactly. Thank you, Paul, from Parts Unknown. Take care. Our best to you and yours and all of your extended family and the folks working with you there in the lab. Take care, Paul.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I don't know where you're going to find better information than that. Paul from Parts Unknown is most generous in sharing his knowledge with us. And so let's run over to the old holler tree wherein we keep the extraordinary ordinary roundtable. I put a message in the chat there asking if anybody had any questions, and I asked a couple along the way that was based on what came through. But let's see how it's going out there in the hot world that Sparky occupies. And remember, we've got $385 to go to finish the week, $185 to finish the evening as far as fundraising goes. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
There
in front yard's cooler than the backyard where the man cave is.
And the man cave's infernal right now, right?
100 degrees in the man cave. It's only,
ouch,
like 97 degrees, you know, ambient temperature.
But, as I am always required to say, it's a dry heat.
True.
Yeah, true. It's true that it is a dry heat. But it doesn't really feel bad until it gets over 100. When it's like 170, 110 is when it really feels bad.
I'm listening to some, I'm on hold, but I'm listening to somebody. But
we had 112 last week.
Yeah, that's. Okay. I mean, it with the way the humidity rises here,
go right out.
That's just mind-boggling. Well, let's move around the room and.
My little county is up to 80 cases now.
Hey, was there? I read what you sent along. Was there ever any further why or wherefore of the shooting that took place there in your county?
No, just a disgruntled employee, I guess. But. It shut down the distribution center for the rest of the whole week.
And for those who don't know, there was a shooting at a Walmart distribution center there in Sparky's neck of the woods, and it was, God. Well, America.
The shooter killed one person and injured four before the Red Bluff police killed the shooter. So, but he's shot about 20 to 30 rounds at the cops before they got him. So they had a shootout at the OK Corral in front of the Walmart. He crashed a car into the office and just got out of the car and started shooting randomly into the distribution center.
Jeez. Well, I am kind of looking forward to the holiday weekend. It'll be a socially distant holiday weekend. But I checked in with my buddy at the Wiggling Pig, and my brisket and my salmon fillet are going to be here probably about 10 o'clock in the morning, which means that I'll get them in the brine by about noon. And so by about noon on Saturday, I should be able to put them on the fire. It won't take long. We'll have the salmon for a snack, and then wait on the brisket. Brisket maybe Sunday.
Well, I ain't going nowhere. I only go out of the house once a week. And that's an adventure.
Oh, believe you me, I know. And I'm still using my catch more flies with honey than with vinegar theory. You know, when I see somebody wearing a mask, I thank them for giving a fuck about their community.
Well,
and they're usually surprised, and they say, "Well, thank you. My pleasure." You know, we can make this better.
I usually give everybody a lot of room. If you have a mask, at least 6 feet. If you don't have a mask, I just stay the fuck. I was in the Dollar General, and I turned, and I was going to go down the refrigerator aisle, refrigerated food aisles, and right coming towards me was a woman with a kid with no mask. I just was like, I must have jumped 10 feet back with that cart, turned around, and went around.
You know, I think we really do need a nationwide effort to produce masks that simply read, if you can read this, you're too damn close.
You can probably get somebody to make that for you.
Oh, and Paul just sent along a picture of Sadie, and she is adorable. She kind of looks like the canine version of one of those fluffy puffy things in the drive-through car wash. It's just all curly and fluffy and white, and yeah, I see what he meant about having the chow tail.
Roger saying post a picture in the chat.
I can't. Different machines.
You were able to bring him in onto this call for you before the call even started.
He was wonderful
with Skype.
Yeah, he was on the stress line. So that's all. That it's just that I've got my email up on a different machine.
Oh well, it says it's coming up, and it said in the chat Bob added in his phone number.
Oh no, that wasn't Paul from Parts Unknown. That's Tracy.
Oh, I thought that was Paul. Tracy usually comes in on her own name.
Yeah, but she's in on a phone number this evening. I think maybe because.
Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Are you there?
It said you added her. That's why I thought it was Paul.
Right. No. I saw her call come in, and I added her. Are you there, Tracy?
Yes, I am. I haven't talked to anybody or you guys. I just wanted to check in and let you know I'm still alive.
Well, I've been wondering. You've been kind of incognito and all.
It's incognito.
Yes.
Get it right.
I know. Well, I have news for you.
You do?
Yes. And for Sparky too. Because Agnes is a happy, 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 happy girl.
We find a three-ply toilet paper.
Yes, I did.
Well, so that means that the three-ply toilet paper that I bought for you, I should just keep, or should I just go ahead and still send it to you?
No, keep it. It's here now. So that way you're super bougie stocked.
Well, I only found that one little bag of three-ply, and when I saw it, I went, I'm snagging this stuff.
Well, there's like 12 mega rolls of this stuff, so it might last us till a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it's.
I'm being a smart ass.
I told you, your ass will thank you for it. Because I found it the other day, and Jan's like, why are you buying more toilet paper? We have enough toilet paper to last the apocalypse. And I'm like, I told her, I bought it for Bob. She's like, they don't have toilet paper in North Carolina, in West Virginia. I said, not three ply.
Yeah, that's an advance in toilet paper technology, commensurate with the development of the Clovis point in ancient North American prehistory.
I have no idea what that meant, but okay.
Well, you'll take.
Where
you'll,
do you get?
You'll take anthropology
you
at some point.
Three ply.
I found it at Wally World.
Is there a brand name, or is it a store
Northern.
Brand? Or
yeah, it's like Northern Ultra.
I'll be damned! Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. Or maybe I didn't notice it.
Well, if you know. Would, but
three
you
ply,
right, Scott.
You got to look right, close, Scott.
Rather close. There's Northern.
Well,
if you look at Northern, it's in the purple. It's purple. The purple package of Northern.
Yeah, it's purple you know, purple for regal, purple for royalty. I mean,
purple for wiping your ass, and your ass will never be the same.
Purple for say goodbye to your poor inflamed butt.
Yes.
Or something.
When I saw that package, I thought, because I've still got a lot of the script running around in my brain, when I saw the purple in that package, I immediately thought of the line from The Lion in Winter, where the young French king says, I am a king, sir. And Henry II replies, because you put your ass on purple cushions. Yeah.
That part.
I haven't been around because...
I have been so engulfed with school. This is my last week of summer school. I am working on my, I just finished reading 200 pages about black mothers and black mother, maternal and infant mortality rates. And it's so painfully bad that I'm actually considering becoming a doula. In addition to everything else that I'm doing, but I think I would be amazing at it. And also all the other stuff that I'm doing, but I'm getting And you guys remember I'm taking three summer school classes. And yes, I'm getting A's in all three classes. That part. But I just haven't had the chance to talk to you guys, and I miss you terribly. And I have no idea what's going on in the world other than the fact that Donald Trump is still an asshole. And he's so evil that coronavirus won't even touch him, which pisses me off on a regular basis. And I'm so sad that Carl Reiner died, and I just heard that Hugh Downs died.
Yep.
Well, the Carl Reiner was a gem. That guy was a I was so funny because Alex didn't realize he knew who Rob Reiner was, not for his acting, but for his directing. Because, you know, The Princess Bride and all sorts of other things.
When Harry Met Sally.
Right, when Harry Met Sally and all, blah, 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 blah. But he's like, yeah, he goes, I didn't know he was an actor. Like, kind of like, you know, well, he knew who, you know, Ron Howard was because he's been watching Happy Days and Believe It or Not, The Andy Griffith Show. Because he's like, he had no idea when people were talking about Barney Fife. And, you know, and didn't know until he started watching the Andy Griffith Show what they meant about being about Barney Fife until he started watching the Andy Griffith Show. He's like, oh, now I get it, what they mean about Barney Fife. Like, yeah. But no, school is going well. I'm doing really well. I almost passed out the other day after running 9.5 miles. So I'm backing out on my training for this week and only running like 3 miles a day and blah, 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 blah. So that's it. But that's it. The world is coming to an end and we're all screwed and Trump's an asshole. Did he really talk shit about Joe Biden wearing a mask?
Yes.
And that he would look good wearing a mask. He kind of reminded him of the Lone Ranger. Did he really say that out loud?
Yeah, he even tweeted out that he's the Lone Warrior.
Did he really mean to say that he's the Lone Asshole?
He's the Lone Spreader. I mean, but the big news today is that we have a new case out of the Corona Palooza in Tulsa, Tracy.
Oh, how many people have been affected?
A lot.
999.
But this is special because it's old. It's the man that Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Sarah Palin referred to as Herb Cain, old 999 himself.
What? Herb Cain?
Yeah, Herm Cain. Remember Herman, old 999, ran for president and everything? Yeah.
And
he doesn't just have it. He doesn't just have it. He has it bad enough they put him in the hospital.
Aww. Is he on the ventilator yet?
What was he doing in Oklahoma? He went to a Trump rally, right?
Yeah, he went there. He went there to demonstrate his faith in his God Emperor.
Oh, man.
Did you see the picture?
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't realize he was in the. Oh, okay. That is so lame. That guy is totally lame.
He's a noble Negro. He was leading the
Negro delegation there.
Yeah, and you notice all the Negroes were all together. The black people were all together in their little group. So they were the token
the
black
color
group.
Section.
Yeah, they were
black.
Yeah. Yeah, they were segregated in Tulsa. No irony there. Mm-hmm. Not a lick.
No irony there. Not a lick.
What's Greentown? Greenville? What is that? Tulsa? Yes, they're in their own little space.
Yeah. Well, did you hear that they took down all the social distancing things in Tulsa, the signs and whatnot?
Oh, the floor stickers.
Stickers. They removed all that stuff. They said, just take off your masks and let's have a party. You know, okay. And a lot of those people are becoming positive or have registered positive.
Well, at least once in the last week, Oklahoma ran a 100% positive rate in testing. 340 tests. 340 tests, 340 positives.
Oh, my God.
We're going to die, Bob.
And
you see what's happening in California. I mean, we opened to soon. And then we have the assholes. I found, like you say, the Confederate states. Oh, speaking of Confederate states, I had to yell at my mother. Because she went back to church in North
Mother
Carolina. And she went back to church without a mask in Trump country. And I'm like, you went to, and she's the lone Negro. I said, what? Did she, why?
Shit.
First of all, you went to church in Trump, in the middle of fucking Trump country. And I didn't cuss to my mother because I am a grown ass woman. I'm still terrified of my mother. But I said, really? Really? You went, and you know, everybody at your church, except for you, voted for Trump. And you went to church without a mask on. And I said, did anybody else have on a mask? She's like, no. They don't, except for one person who has a breathing disorder, they had on the mask. And apparently,
hey, who's running the water? Quit it.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Was that you, Sparky?
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, you have, you know, she's had pneumonia not once but twice. And you would have run all these Trump pansies without a mask on? And your church does stream, right? Why the hell did you go to church? And she, you know, after I stopped yelling at her, she's like, okay, I won't go back. I said, please don't. I said, there's no reason for you to go around all these crazy-ass white people.
Well, why? Why? I mean, was she, see, that's what I don't get. I mean,
Well, Bob, you know that social gatherings produce serotonin, and that's what people crave when you're around people.
I thought electrolytes were what people craved.
Well, I'm trying to say is that when people are around their friends and relatives and whatnot, they're happy. It's hard to be isolated, but I'd rather be isolated than sick. You know?
I would be isolated and alive, okay?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and this disease, everything, the news keeps changing on it. Now it causes brain damage, I heard the other day. You know, the symptoms are too scary, man. This is totally unreal, and it keeps mutating. And then China came out with a report they might have discovered another swine flu. That came out 2 days ago.
Yeah, I started the program with it a couple of days ago.
That's right, yeah. So,
So she promised me she would not go back to church. I'm like, don't even go back to the, I said, how do you even know that they even wiped anything down? I'm like, don't go back to that disease-riddled, Trump-supporting motherfuckers. I didn't say motherfuckers again because it's my mom, and she would have a conniption. But it's like, look, you are in a fucking Confederate state. Don't go near those people.
Look, you know that, and it only came out subsequent, but Mike Pencilneck Geek went and got himself anointed or whatever at the First Baptist Church of Dallas and Viral Emporium, and there were 200 unmasked choir people singing for all they were worth, and him sitting on the front row. And what it turns out, they had had a cluster in that church only weeks before. What the?
I'm doing an assignment about the five personality traits, and one of the things is about agreeableness and the traits, you know, if you score high, you care about people, you're altruistic, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if you score low, you know, you don't care about people. So my assignment was to write about, you know, if you're high on it, on the scale, and if you're low, and then write how you scored. And guess what? I scored high. Believe it or not, I care about people. And so so the question was, write what, you know, people who score low on it. And I said, those people are selfish, blah, 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 and they don't wear face masks. That's what I wrote on my assignment. I can't wait to see what I'll bet you though.
if they came out with a MAGA face mask, I bet you that they'd cover up immediately.
If the king of the MAGA,
they're selling them, Scott.
Mask,
Oh, there are MAGA face masks.
Yeah.
Yes, but if the king maggot won't wear one. Well, if the king of the maggots would wear a face mask, they would wear them.
So what are they using them for in the meantime? When they shop for grapes, something to carry the grapes to the checkout in, or what's the deal?
Hold on, that was good.
Well, there are some there's some maggots that do, because my brother-in-law is a maggot and he wears a face mask. There's the maggots or the libertarians or whatever they are, the ones that believe in science. So I don't understand. How can you support Trump and believe in science? How does that work?
Well, have you seen his latest Facebook tweets? He tweeted twice, a racist yelling white power. I think that was this week. I mean, the guy is just unhinged. He's getting worse. I remember 3 weeks ago I was on the front porch and I mentioned, he's just getting worse, but, you know, nobody's doing anything about it. It's like this train wreck. He sees his poll numbers and he's getting more and more frightened. So his only recourse is to go all full Confederate. And so
Science, if you believe in the Peter Principle as science, Trump is the epitome of the Peter Principle.
He has risen to the highest level of his own incompetence. Exactly, Roger.
Okay.
Yeah, good point.
We're all doomed, Bob.
That's Scott's gimmick.
I apologize.
Yes, that's a gimmick violation. But Tracy, you already got a note from Kyle. We're going to die, Bob. Gee, Tracy, thanks for being a ray of fucking sunshine.
Well, let's all watch Ingmar Bergman's Seventh Seal tonight. That's a real happy movie where a guy has to do a dance.
When you have a test due tonight, a homework assignment, a test due tomorrow, and two finals, fuck all y'all. I don't give a damn about being a fucking ray of sunshine at this point.
You'll enjoy this. Brendan just wrote in and said, as you guys are talking about toilet paper for some reason, it brings to mind one of my favorite LP titles, The Funkadelics, Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
And Kyle reminds us, forget
Funkadelics.
Kyle reminds us, forget the white power tweets. Take a look at his new actual Nazi logo. Oh, Jesus Christ. I saw that earlier today. Yeah, it's an eagle with a circular thing in its claws, and it looks for all the world like the typical Nazi logo.
The fucking letterhead of the Third Reich.
Right out of one of the rallies.
Know? Yeah, God, I posted in chat the other day.
Well, I find myself sort of in Tracy's boat. I've been out of the loop for a little while. And it's not that I'm not caring about what's going on. It's like for self-preservation, where you just got to hit the pause button.
Overload, Scott. It's called overload.
And how do you deal with it, Bob? Because you're up to it and in it and immersed in it and surrounded by it and dancing with it. More than 5 days a week, because from the time you go to sleep, it's all show prep. It's all show research. You get what I mean?
Yeah. Never ends.
I got a question for you, Bob.
Yes, Sparky?
Has to do with the Russian thing. Do you have your father's flag?
Yes, I do. And I not only have my father's flag, I have my uncle's flag with the 48 stars on it.
Oh, wow.
Good. I have my dad's and my stepson. I don't know who will get my flag.
Makes you sick. It makes you furious.
All I could think of was that guy's a goddamn traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Treason. and we are, and our country is so dysfunctional, we can't do a damn thing about it.
But who knows it? Punk ass motherfucker. Yeah, I said it.
Ugh, I know. Well, oddly enough, this little impromptu front porch for this Thursday has gone by rather quickly. And as I said earlier, just to keep even with the week, we need to raise $185 between now and, like, you know, 25 minutes from now. If we could take a bite out of that, that would be awesome. So I will probably we'll probably have another front porch tomorrow, Sparky, if you're game for it.
I ain't going nowhere.
Well, that's true.
How much do you need, Bob?
Oh, we're 185 for today, and then 385 to finish the week.
Okay, so help me with a challenge, because, you know, okay, it has to involve something about my homework and not giving a fuck about anything about other than homework. And Tracy, I don't give a fuck about anything but homework challenge now.
It's Tracy's I ain't gonna graduate MAGA yell loudly challenge.
Yes. For, let's see, you said it's for $50.
$50. Okay, that's awesome, Tracy. Thank you, dear. So, you know,
I'm going to do the 50 right now.
We match up $50 for Tracy, and that'll take us down to only $85 for the evening. That's awesome. Thank you, Tracy. That's Tracy's I ain't going to graduate MAGA yell loudly challenge.
Thank you. Cause my brain is just
right. Well, now, you know, you got a note from James in Illinois, Tracy, for Tracy's mom. Doesn't she know she's the black friend for all those goddamn Trumpanzees at that white church? Talk about being used.
That part. So they can say that we don't. It's not, we like black people. See, that's one less year.
I mean, that's practically Trump at his rally back in 2016 saying, "See my Negro."
Mm-hmm.
That was in Redding, California.
Yes, it was. I know.
Where's my African American?
Where's my African American? And of course tomorrow, he's going to be in Mount Rushmore for fireworks display, and we're not gonna burn down the Black Hills of South Dakota. But if we do, it'll be to make the Black Hills great again. But it's not that kind of black, like in Black Hills.
Black.
But it's not like Black Lives Matter Black Hills. Don't be confused.
Right.
Yeah, but if
and oh, Black Lives Matter.
Black Hills burn, it'll be black.
Remember, Black Lives Matter.
Forest fires are the most devastating thing in nature you can see.
And if any of those Black Lives Matter people, those anarchists. And those Antifa show up. There's no way we're going to let them put ropes around Mount Rushmore and pull it down. We just won't. We'll send them all to prison.
You know,
there's a lot of mountain left there. They could put me there.
Oh, God. I don't wish death on people usually, but God damn it.
Well, recently
maybe Trump at Rushmore will pull a Martin Landau and topple over
and fall off and slide down Lincoln's nose.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, see, I can't look at and I forget the first time I ever watched North by Northwest.
Yeah,
but you know, there they are in that lovely Frank Lloyd Wright-esque house, because I mean that's just so Frank Lloyd Wright, that house they're in. And then, well, Jesus Christ, Mr. Hitchcock, we had no idea they were building Frank Lloyd Wright houses on top of Lincoln's head. And so every time I see Lincoln now, I see Martin Landau, you know, oh, splat.
but the beauty of the shot is Landau is standing there, and doesn't he have the little figurine?
Yeah.
And he gets this look on his face and kind of twists himself a certain way, and his fall is immaculate. You know, the way he sort of crumples.
Yeah.
Drops the figurine, it cracks on the rock, and off he goes into the abyss. God damn, that's filmmaking. That's genius.
Oh, speaking of films and movies, and I have a viewing tip for you guys. It's called, for anyone that has Netflix, it's called Disclosure. And it's about transgender people in cinema and movies and television, and about the need to disclose who they are and how they're portrayed in TV and and movies. It's amazing.
I added it to my list.
Tracy, you have a wonderful way of tying into stories that I've got sitting in the stack.
I often do that, don't I, Bob?
Yes, it's your magic.
Transgender, have you watched the second season of Pose yet? It's on Netflix.
No, that's coming. I've got to get Agnes and me together in the same space for an extended period of time. We've both been, you know, she's running around and helping take care of the grandkids, and I'm playing out in the yard, and, you know, when I'm not doing that, I'm doing naked radio, and, well, you know, we best not think about that.
Please don't. I just got a visual on that.
Are you watching Yellowstone, Tracy?
Remember, I'm in school. I think I sent you a reply, and I said, thank God this is my last week of this session, and next session I'm only taking one class. So how many episodes have they shown?
Two.
How many episodes are we? Okay,
two.
So by the time this is, so by next week I'll be able to watch, well, not next week, but the week after I'll be able to watch television.
Well, so here's that story you just tied into. Dr. Ben Carson, the guy who has a portrait of him hanging out with Jesus in his house.
Oh, God damn it.
Secretary of Housing and Urban Development has decided that there's too many homeless trans people who are getting to sleep with a roof over their heads. So HUD has said that they're going to return decision-making to local shelter providers so they can establish an admissions policy that best serves their unique communities and better accommodates the religious beliefs of shelter providers. Now, these are all shelters that receive taxpayer dollars. And they're going to, it reverses an Obama-era rule that said you could not discriminate against trans people who needed shelter. And Ben Carson says, yes, we can. But here's the thing. When you think about it for a minute, what it means is that you can discriminate against out trans people. Because,
and there's Kendall.
Because there's all kinds of trans people out there who are not living their best lives, who are not living their true selves. So you have to wonder, you know, how are they going to enforce this evil shit? When you come through the door, is there going to be a check to make sure a dude's not wearing a pair of Vanity Fairs? Is there going to be a check to make sure that that some woman isn't wearing a pair of Hanes boxer briefs?
Yeah, how are they going to know that they're trans?
The only people that can be discriminated against with this are the people who have decided to live their own lives. And that makes it extra double plus Dr. Evil, because it's got a soupçon of stupid folded into it.
Hmm. Well, did you hear about the Supreme Court decision on education that it's okay to provide tax dollars to religious schools now?
Yeah, we talked about that a couple of nights ago. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just this complete caving to religious interests, and this is part of that.
Yeah, in contravention of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. I mean, this for all intents and purposes, this thing's like, Establishment Clause? What Establishment Clause?
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Steve.
here's another wrinkle. What about a person who's not transgendered but who's a transvestite?
Well, if they show up in a stunning cocktail frock, they're not going to get in.
And here's the other thing that none of you guys are thinking about. What Supreme Court decision did we just have?
Yeah, what about that? About non-discriminating against the workplace. So.
Well, what they're trying to do is
wait a minute. Okay. That's Title 7 of the CRA. It's either Title 1 or Title 3 of the CRA. Says you cannot discriminate based on sex in public accommodations. And I think it would be a very easy case to say, well, if that's the definition in Title VII, that's certainly the definition in Title I.
Yeah, but Steve, here's what I was thinking along those lines. They're trying to set up a conflict of laws case between the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and Hobby Lobby versus this ruling. Because this decision just came down full, and they knew full well about the LGBTQ Civil Rights Act decision. They made that with this in mind, so they're trying to get Hobby Lobby to trump that. They never stop.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, I understand what you're saying. I don't think they're smart enough to do that. I think Ben Carson is just a nasty person, and that's why he's doing it. He's not that smart. This guy's not that smart.
No, he's just evil. It's just evil.
But Ben Carson's
not making the decision. This is being made by some maggot lawyer inside HUD.
Ben Carson's not the top of all this. There are people behind pulling the strings. Everybody that we're looking at in the hierarchy of government are all peons, and there's somebody behind pulling the strings on all this shit. I mean, it's just like if you're going to fight an environmental fight, you can win and win and win and win against putting a dam in a canyon. You lose once, and the dam gets built, and everything you've ever done is toast. And all these civil rights, transgender, LGBT, alphabet soup after that, all of these things, you can win individually all the time, but there's somebody behind pulling the strings, and all you got to do is lose once, and everything is gone. And that's one of the dichotomies of climate change, the sexuality issues, marriage issues, all of that is we keep fighting individual little fires, and there's somebody behind that throws a forest fire down the entire fucking valley and blows it all away in an instant.
It's Lucy pulling the football from underneath Charlie Brown's feet. Every time we think we got it, and he pulls the fucking football. Bitch ass.
The troubling thing about the whole reason Trump is where he is, you know, has been given access to the levers of power. He's doing an old magician's trick called misdirection. While he's going into his act via tweets and via daily news cycle, the people who are doing the real insidious shit, no one's ever heard of, and they're certainly not. You know, when you're dealing with staff lawyers and stuff, there's no hearings before Congress to make sure that they're qualified and that they're vetted. Hell no, they're the wizard behind the curtain.
Well, do you remember Scott? Do you remember when W was leaving office, and we had been told all along that they had salted in a bunch of theocratic, loyal Bushy maniacs? Because we were talking about this just the other night. A lot of them were graduates of the Patrick Henry School of Law. They're still there.
Yeah.
They're still there.
Yeah.
And they're still doing their dirty business.
And those three assholes in Mar-a-Lago that have taken over the VA.
Yeah.
Well, look what happened to Southern District, New York last week. Behrman, he got the Friday surprise.
Yeah, but look what happened today.
Yep. And then it's interesting the timing to that. And so tomorrow is going to be a Friday surprise.
No, that was the Southern District of New York telling Donald Trump, you may try to kneecap us, but we can still do shit. So they arrested the FBI arrested Jeffrey Epstein's pimp.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And Ralph's now tells me that Bill Pepe the Frog Barr tried to visit Ghislaine Maxwell.
Because you got to
remember that Barr is shitting bricks because his daddy is the guy who hired Jeffrey Epstein, completely unqualified, to teach at one of the ritziest private schools in New York City. And the right wing is already losing its shit. I mean, I don't even know that we should use the term already. I saw a meme earlier today.
What do you call it, Bob? Waterbowled shitless? What are you
yes,
saying?
They are, they are scared waterbowled.
Bob, can I ask a question? Thank what you. Was the speculation? Why did Epstein get that job from Barr's father? Was it something that he did? Was he a pimp for him or what?
He was running a money hustle back then too. You got to remember he became fabulously wealthy. For some reason or another, a mysterious statue of Jeffrey Epstein has appeared in New Mexico now. I think in Albuquerque. Real weird. But the maggots are losing their shit. I saw a meme earlier today. It was a picture, of course, of the email lady,
Jeffrey
Hillary
Epstein
Clinton.
He had a big old ranch down in New Mexico.
Yes, he did.
He did, yeah.
So the meme shows a picture of Hillary Clinton on her cell phone, and it says, "Hello, suicide hotline. I'd like to order a suicide."
Oh, wow. Oh no!
Well, and
so now there's
covered.
Now there are photographs circulating that purport to show Ghislaine Maxwell watching Chelsea Clinton walk down the aisle, and they're going out of what remains of their tiny little itty bitty minds.
Yeah,
What was the name of that Netflix documentary from that premiered about a month ago about Epstein? Was it Filthy Money, Dirty Money? It was something like that. It was
filthy
like
rich
Filthy Rich. Filthy
it's
Rich.
Not a bad series.
It is really telling once you dig deeply and wear protective gear when you're digging deeply into the lives and backgrounds of these people.
You cleanse yourself with bleach and hand sanitizer after you watch it and before you watch it.
Hell yeah. But, you know, and see, this is the insidious part of the way that the Republicans operate. They've already shown through history that they are totally inept when it comes to governing in any responsible, legitimate way. So the only other thing for them to do is to seed like you're seeding a flower bed or whatever, seed the system with so much evil and corruption and ineptitude
that you overwhelm
that it fucks up the mechanism, and then people go out and vote in November and they elect a Democratic president, and we retake the Senate and we keep the House and move forward in that direction. Well, that's barely going to scratch the surface in the undoing of the shit that's been done, because this stuff goes back to the age of Reagan, if not further. A lot of the systematic rat fuckery that has gone on behind the scenes.
Oh, what was it? What was it? Way back. What was it called? The Franklin Society or something?
that really
probably and that rings a bell.
And that's why the right wing are recycling all this shit and trying to pin it on Democrats and Comet Ping Pong Pizza and everything. Scads of Republicans got busted back in the 80s and 90s, engaged in a real live, no kidding, pedophile ring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
You look it up. I want to say Franklin Society, but I may be confusing that with the Franklin Mint.
I know the case that you're talking about.
But we're running out of time, and I got to extend thank yous because Tracy's challenge has been met and then some. Thank you, Tracy, first and foremost, for your I'm not going to graduate MAGA yell loudly. James in Illinois jumped in. Will in Chicago jumped in. Texas T jumped in. Otto DeShot there in the chat room jumped in. And so we met Tracy's challenge and $10 to the good, which means we got $75 to finish tonight. And then that leaves $200 tomorrow. And this is, like I've said, this in the next month or so are going to be hard. Keeping up is critically important. But thank you to you all, and thanks, Tracy. And like I said, one of these days you'll sign up for Anthropology 101, and then you'll know about things like Clovis points, and it'll be fascinating.
Well, I would if I had to take them. The class I'm taking next session is the last class that I have to take for GE, so everything else will be all for my major. So there will not be, I was hoping to take anthropology for my GE class, but they didn't offer it for summer school. And I was like, Bob would be so proud of me if I take an anthropology class, but it's biology 101. So,
based on what I started the program talking about, I very quietly, Dave number 11 and Roger, I very quietly, as we've been cruising along, opened up my jar of Henry's lemon garlic olives and have been pitting them. I got enough olives pitted for a couple of martinis, and I've created enough headspace in the jar that I can afford to use a little bit of brine for the dirty martini. So I'd say we're all set. And again, unpaid product placement, but Henry makes some fan-fucking-tastic olives. And I'm eternally in Dave number 11's debt for it. And, well, Roger, you know how damn good they are.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, but you can only get them in Humboldt County.
Right, which is why I feel particularly privileged out of all of this.
If I were still down in Humboldt County and going to Farmer's Market and doing this shit, I'd make a point of walking out to where McKinley's statue used to be because they ripped it down a while back, and tell Henry how much his olives are getting toasted on the program.
Well,
and I toasted in a good sense toasted.
Yeah, Dave number 11 actually pulled out a couple of clips from the program and sent them along to Henry and told me that Henry was just thrilled to hear it.
Well, he would be. He's a hell of a neat guy.
And
hey, Bob.
Yes, Scott.
Earlier, we were talking about Carl Reiner. Tomorrow night on CBS, 8, 7 Central Time, two colorized episodes of the Dick Van Dyke Show. Both are Carl Reiner-centric, where he appears in both of these episodes,
as
and they're Alan, very good.
Yeah, as Alan
seen
Brady.
Them zillions of times. Huh?
As Alan Brady, yeah.
As Alan Brady, yeah. And his mom, Rob Reiner's mom, was in When Harry Met Sally.
In that eponymous scene with the I'll Have What She's Having. Yeah, I've seen that, yeah. Lewis, but Tara, of Tara Buster, made a point of taking me to Katz's Deli, and I saw the very table, the table where Sally faked the orgasm, and the table where the lady said, "I'll have what she's having."
Well, speaking of right before, like a week before I left Cincinnati to move out here a little over 20 years ago, my friend Christine took me to dinner at an Italian restaurant in northern Kentucky. And if you remember the movie Rain Man and the toothpick scene where the toothpicks are dropped all over the floor, that was filmed at that restaurant. I forget the name of the place, but it has some pretty awesome Italian food. You can probably look it up the next time you're in Kentucky, near Cincinnati, northern Kentucky. Check it out. I'm sure it's still there. God damn, some of the best Italian food I ever ate.
You were on WKRP in Cincinnati. Cincinnati. All right, we got to get out of here. I assume we will do a Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow, unless I just say, you know, and decide to do the long weekend. But, the grill, the smoker will be going by then. I don't know. It'll be a game time decision. But
I'll send Ace a link.
Okay, thanks, Sparky. I appreciate it. And thanks to all of you who participated this evening. Thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown for his encyclopedic explanation of where we stand now in terms of testing and the disease generally. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air by your subscriptions at PayPal, Patreon, a la carte contributions, some combination of all of the above. Thank you so very much. It's the only reason this program has persisted for as long as it has. Oh, darn, I had somebody on the stress line, and I completely spaced. I so apologize. I'm a bad person, and I'm sorry. Darn it. I feel horrible now. I got too many things going on. Sometimes my OCD gets overwhelmed. But thank you for keeping the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky and the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And remember, you can be a big help to Coal River Mountain Watch if you use smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the beneficiary of a portion of the proceeds going to a donation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your masks. Pay attention to Paul. Maintain social distance. If somebody burbling and garbling along with "Don't more great more first," all that crap is moving towards you, do like Sparky and get 10 or 15 feet back. Quick. Avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.